Well, good morning, everybody. We have a great panel here today and such a broad topic. We'll do our best to get into it in 30 minutes. I just want a quick introduction. I'm the former CTO of Marvel Studios. As CTO of Marvel, I had oversight of the studio's digital, physical, and content protection teams. I was charged with developing the studio's cybersecurity and content protection strategy. Many of the programs we built during my tenure were subsequently adopted by the broader Disney studio, which we were really excited about. I've been in this business for more than 21 years, and the last 16 have all been focused on M&E. We have a great panel, as I said. Industry experts ready to get into this broad topic of emerging gaps, threats, and vulnerabilities in the world of 2016 and 17. Kind of a world where things change so fast. So spending some time to kind of talk about their approaches that they take to detect, contain, and remediate these known and unknown threats. I feel so funny saying that, and vulnerabilities. So give me just 1 second to tee up this conversation. I kind of wanted to just make a couple high-level observations that really apply across all verticals, but I think it helps set the tone. And a lot of these comments come from information that I found from sources such as RAND, Verizon, FireEye, Carnegie Mellon, and Gartner. On the topic of gaps, as we get into it today, I just want to emphasize that there's a huge problem in finding qualified cybersecurity professionals. In fact, in finding cybersecurity professionals at all. I think in 2015, we had a gap of 209,000 jobs that went unfilled. There are projections by Symantec that expect the shortfall to grow to 1.5 million in 2019. So that's a massive problem. Further, 11% of the cybersecurity workforce today is represented by women. That's a huge, huge gender gap and one that we need to address. Recruiting skilled and diverse cybersecurity professionals, and more importantly, retaining them. Once we do that, will be one of the biggest challenges I think we face over the next 4 to 5 years. The average retention time right now is about 18 months for top talent. The next thing I wanted to hit on was the fact that we continue to see the explosion in the number of IoT devices that are being manufactured and brought to market on a yearly basis, and sadly, they still fail. It seems to be designed with security in mind, so it'll be really interesting to see if manufacturers are pressured by the private sector to change their design behavior, or if that will take modifications of liability laws or maybe some government regulation. The other thing I wanted just to touch on real quick is, as you've heard from this morning, you know, on the threat front, we still look at the same countries as being places for concern: Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. We don't expect that to change. I think it is interesting that we're seeing underdeveloped countries increasingly attacked and targeted. So I think is interesting and worth keeping in mind. With that, let's go ahead and get to our panel. And I'm going to give you guys a question, but please introduce yourself and talk about your backgrounds. After introducing the question that I wanted you to answer is, you know, emerging gaps, what have you seen over the past year or observed across our industry, and what strategies have you put in place to address them? And when you hit on the subject, please let us know about how you know, there's the known and unknown thing going on, so I would love to hear how you look for things that you're not aware of, because that's always difficult.
Hi, guys. I'm Dan Meacham. I'm over at Legendary, the cybersecurity and compliance officer. And not to get too much into an answer real quick, but just at a high level, we all know about the resource gap. We also know about the technology gap. But one of the bigger gaps that really has come to fruition over the last 18 months is where we can't test certain things. In particular, so if you're a retail shop, and you have a point-of-sale device that you just, or a card swipe that you just implemented it where you didn't check the firmware. There's no way for us to check the firmware. So when we take a look at those burner phones that we buy at a grocery store that I'm going to use to put my SIM card in before I go overseas, to find out that that particular phone itself now has embedded malware from the manufacturer as a keyboard logger, that's also a scary thing. There's no way for us to actually test that. To me, I think that's one of the new emerging gaps that we have just recently come across beyond the technology and beyond the resourcing and beyond the talent.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Tom from Bad Robot. And really, as far as our challenges, you know, we're a very small company, obviously producing some big name movies, but the biggest gap that I see really is the human element, right? So I come from an manufacturing world, actually. I kind of landed in this industry about 3 years ago, and it's amazing where when you're trying to protect what's inside, that's great, but when the actual content is moving around, that's a little bit moving target, which is really hard to protect. So I find that the human element really is a big component here. It's really how much education you actually educate your, not only the IT folks, but really the actual employees, how much they know about social engineering and how much they know about the threats out there from, you know, from social networks. So that's, for me, is the biggest thing that, you know, obviously I want to bridge as far as the gap concern, and I think education is the key here.
Hi, folks. My name is Jason Smolinoff, and I have my own information security company. It's called CISO Advisory and Investigations. Had that for about the last year. And what I do these days is I help folks primarily with taking proactive measures to help make defensible decisions down the road in the event that there's some type of event or intrusion or data leakage that happens. Prior to that, I was with a company called Stroz Friedberg, which is a digital risk management and investigations firm. And I did primarily performed incident response and data breach investigations on behalf of a variety of companies, a lot of entertainment companies. I'm sure some of you folks have worked with Stroz in the past. Before that, I was with the FBI for about 12 and a half years. And I ran one of the cyber national security squads here in Los Angeles. I was also part of the Electronic Crimes Task Force here. And I've done quite a few content protection everywhere back from, remember the screeners? Remember when we used to send out DVDs to everybody in the whole world? And then everyone would get upset when there would be the movie would get up on the internet before it was out in pre-release. So I've taken about 16 years of doing reactive investigative work, and now I try to put that knowledge into helping companies make defensible security strategies, right? We're not going to be able to stop everything all the time, but what we can do is take a risk-based approach. And I think that that is one of the largest gaps that's out there, is there's two prevailing mindsets. One I call the set it and forget it mindset, where you throw a lot of money at a problem, right? You buy a lot of tools, you buy a lot of DLP, you buy a lot of intrusion prevention and intrusion detection, but then either you don't have the people to monitor it or look at it, or it's not tuned properly and you just let it sit there for 6-8 months and you're hoping that it's doing something for you. The second piece is there's a prevailing, most folks don't have a real information security strategy, right? That's rooted in a risk-based theory, okay? I think folks, I would say that just to start there, that's probably the two main gaps that I see where companies who have breaches or intrusions tend to fall short.
Great. And panelists, I think we have just a hair bit more time available on this topic. Real curious, are you finding any more problems with, some of the typical gaps that were identified in previous years, such as communication with C-level folks due to lack of understanding or lack of trust? Has that stuff worked itself out in your organization? Any problems with proper resourcing?
All right, so from over at Legendary, it comes from the top down. Our CEO, Thomas Toll, is very adamant around cybersecurity. And so the gap there is, this is one of the first positions that I've been in that has been very serious around this particular topic, and very fortunate and blessed as a cybersecurity professional to have that kind of level of support. But I do know that in other positions that I've been, that is been a significant gap, specifically around the understanding and the education. You know, it's not that, you know, it's never happened to us, so why should I worry about it? It's, it's working with the C-suite to give that education and understanding. But I think that with the recent events over the last couple of years, that gap has shrunk significantly. But it does, just because the gap is shrinking doesn't necessarily mean that the resources or the funding is there.
Yeah, I always like emphasizing that fact, and I love seeing the statistic of Wendy put up on screen. Very encouraging trend. So let's move on to threats. And we're going to follow the kind of the same format. You know, what are the emerging threats and vulnerabilities that you guys have discovered or detected, learned about, that are causing you concern, and talk a little bit about, you know, how you identify and mitigate these items.
Okay.
Any one of you can start. I okay. Go in order.
Well, over the last couple of years, what I've been seeing, whether it's in like actual digital content that's getting lost or other types of data, I see one of the biggest threats out there these days, and this might sound surprising to you, it's not what you typically think. I think one of the biggest threats is the emerging regulatory environment that's occurring out there. And everyone's looking at me like, well, wait a minute, you're an information security guy. Why would that be a big issue? Well, when I look at this from a risk-based approach, 4 or 5 years ago, if you had an intrusion, one of the biggest things would be reputational damage, right? There would be competitive damage with having to deal with your clients and your vendors and speaking to people about what happened. But over the past couple of years, I've been before the FTC, the FCC, FINRA, the SEC, State Attorney General in California, and all of them regarding data breaches and computer intrusions, right? And what I see going on is that these regulatory bodies are starting to look at intrusions as a source of revenue. And I know this is kind of like doom and gloom and kind of really not very on a happy note, but they see this as a revenue generation tool. So in even just this year, California came out with their data breach report. And in there, the Attorney General said that if a company is not using the minimum of the 20 critical security controls, that they can be found negligent if there's some type of intrusion that takes place where data gets lost. Now, for those of you with content, right, that's one thing, that's not gonna be an issue. But I know when you're dealing with content, you have marketing and PR folks who are out there doing sweepstakes, they're collecting a ton of data around all that content and using some of the content to help fund these sort of marketing and PR programs, where to the point where that data then not only sits on your networks, but on other third-party networks, and it's your ultimate responsibility. And I've seen many regulatory agencies now hiring information security professionals just like you to go in and work with them, work with their enforcement folks, so that when an intrusion happens, not only do you have to deal with the intrusion itself, which is hard enough, but then you have to worry about these Johnny-come-latelys coming in and saying, okay, I'd like to take a look at the information security strategy you had around protecting this data that was stolen from as part of that breach. And then if they feel like they have any gotcha moments with what you've done in the past, they'll fine you for it. So I see that, and I know it sounds a little bit, it's not technology, it's not technological, and it's not like very sexy, but it's where I see the major risk lying these days.
Tom?
Yeah, so from my standpoint, really, the social networking really is a big threat for me. I mean, it's I was actually amazed to see that most of the, even the employees in the company, they actually have, you know, social profiles and they're very active on it, right? Looking at LinkedIn and you know, the name is mentioned there. And if you think about it, I would say a spy, right? Where's Eric here, it's a great lecture, by the way. So a spy would actually be able to map all this out and use that really to get into the organization. And this is really what scares me, at least, as being the CTO, is somebody can get information through that channel. So for me, that's the biggest threat. We've seen fake profiles, you know, things like that, and you know, click here, and I know this guy and know this guy, and that's the thing that keeps me up at night.
Yeah. And so to touch on a little bit of what Jason had talked about too, I mean, I'm going to give you some old information. I'm not a lawyer. But the federal sentencing guidelines of 1997 had corporate officers personally liable up to $290 million for fraud and neglect. And so back in that day, you know, I was in healthcare, and that was like scary stuff, because if I didn't put an antivirus system on this server and it went down and lost patient records and we lost a life, you know, that's pretty significant stuff there. So you fast forward that sentencing guidelines to where we are today, you can see how that could apply to maybe protecting privacy online or the content that you may have about, you know, your subscribers or other personal information. Then you have to deal with all the different components of the different state laws and regional laws or country laws with regards to how you handle that type of information. And so I definitely can feel that. Then also on the social media, oh my gosh, that's just nuts, because you know, we see these active attacks every day where somebody will create a profile with an extra character in the name that looks familiar. You think about, gosh, if I want to get into a financial into a company and be a vendor or to get some financial information from, I just go out on LinkedIn and look for all the financial controllers, right? And I send a fake email to all of them with an Excel spreadsheet. Hey, do these numbers look right? And you know what? Somebody's going to click. Somebody's going to reply. And then that's where you get in. And once you're in, you're already there. But you know, apart from those basic things, the thing we have to remember is these threats have been around for a long time. And if we're not addressing them now, we're not going to be able to address the threats that come tomorrow. And there are a lot of really, and these guys just, they drive me nuts sometimes in some of the things they do, because some of the new threats that, well, they're not really new threats, they're old threats, but we're seeing them again. It's where an individual or a group of folks will compromise a system in some way or form, but they know that if they steal our data, we're going to see it because of all the different layers of controls that we have in place. So what do? They create a hash file on the script, and then they take that hash file, they break it up in little chunks, they add it to a subdomain of a domain that they own, and they do a bunch of DNS requests. So your system says, hey, you know, everything looks fine, we're all good. But on the back end, they're taking all those chunks of those failed DNS requests, they assemble it together, and now they have your script. And you had no idea that that ever happened. Fortunately enough, there are some controls out there you can put in place to block it. That's an old hat. But what are you going to do for somebody that has that and they're at home or they're somewhere else? There isn't an endpoint security component that can actually protect or monitor that particular piece for you. So these are the new creative ways that are out there today that we have to stay ahead of. But then again, it also comes down to the education, because if you can't block the attack, well, how did the attack get there in the first place? And it's the most simplest things that you could possibly imagine, whether it's an invite to a LinkedIn arrangement or a profile, or it's a friend of a friend, or picking up a thumb drive, or clicking and opening a PDF file, or even just a drive-by from an ad that's out there, which brings up an interesting point, fake news. You guys remember the whole thing about fake news this year? Did you guys happen to see the MSNBC component that they talked about yesterday, about this one guy had a fake news site, and all he was cared about was the money, not necessarily the news? And so he was set up with the Google advertisements, and so he would get maybe, you know, 600,000 clicks on his webpage with the fake news. It didn't matter, because he got $6,000 to $8,000 doing so. And that's what they're looking at doing. And so how do we have the education to recognize those different types of pieces, because that is an interesting vector that I think is not going to go away. And if that fake news comes in, how is that going to implant to get things and things out of our organizations as well in that next phase?
I would just like to add a couple of things onto what you said. I think it's still really fascinating that the oldest vulnerabilities are still the ones most commonly exploited. I read a really interesting fact in the Gartner report, and I think it's worth sharing. Through 2020, 90% of the vulnerabilities exploited will continue to be the ones we as IT security professionals have known about for at least a year. So, you know, I just find things like that fascinating. The other thing I wanted to just touch on was threat targets. It looks like in the upcoming year, IoT devices, which we've all heard about, cloud resources, and shadow IT will be high on the list of targets. So let's move on to the next topic we wanted to talk about, and that was, what do you guys think about threat detection today? And, you know, keep in mind this new world we live in. We just touched on, you know, identity access management in the earlier presentation, talked about cloud, Internet of Things. So kind of think of that new world and let us know what your approach is today. Have you modified it at all based on these new and emerging technologies?
So one thing that we're strongly looking at, obviously, is SIEM. So be able to monitor the environment, you know, externally, any kind of trend, you know, traffic trends specifically for, you know, downloads or uploads that are not supposed to happen. So these are the biggest thing as far as protecting the content, obviously protecting from, you know, the normal out there, the hacking, the old activity that's always happening. That's really the biggest thing that, you know, I see as far as shadow IT. Shadow IT can be obviously an enemy, but can also be a friend. So you gotta take it in perspective. I like to embrace it in a way that at least that to know what's out there, what the users are actually using, and why they're using it for, what they're using it for. Maybe there's a way to use it in a more secure way, basically, but we'll find a different solution. But really, what we're trying to solve is their problem. So. That's kind of my view on the shadow IT thing. And then IoT, obviously IoT, we are a small company, so we don't have probably as many, but this is definitely an ongoing threat and a growing threat. So I think, again, education, talking to your employees and having them understand that bringing in devices is not something that you can take lightly. So that's the biggest thing for me.
All right, and so back on the threats things, there's a lot of different technology components that are out there, right? And I promise you I'm not going to swear because I can't use the bad language up here, but there's some really cool stuff out there, all right? And, you know, whether it's binary and all these other different pieces, the SIEM is an absolute must, especially when you know, like our organization is all cloud, all SaaS-based, right? And so if we're going to introduce an enterprise SaaS or cloud application, you know, we make sure that we have the access and the activity logs that feed in. But here's the reality. Our industry, our culture, our universe that we live in is a dynamic resourcing of projects, right? And so I may have team members, I may have employees, but when we're working on a feature or another product or something, where is that talent coming in? When we're looking at the creative artists, we're looking at the color folks, the sound folks, and so forth, all the freelance. So no matter how much I can invest at the corporate level, it's at that project level, at those different resources, those dynamic resources, that's where some of the different challenges and those particular threats that come in. So I may have a great solution, but if I can't share that solution to that mom and pop shop in the garage or that one person with their computer at home or what have you, that's where I think we start seeing that weak link in the big giant threatscape that we're trying to address here. And so that's what we have to look at. What are the processes we can put in place? What are the controls we can place to help envelope that? And so it's not so much saying you can't do this. It's let me help you be secure in achieving the objective that we want to do as a whole for this particular project. Let me be successful. Let you be successful at what you need to do. Let me give you the right tools. And even if it's just a temporary tool or temporary time. But I think that is the biggest threat that we have is, you know, as those projects, as those events or those different things that come on board, they're going to dynamically bring in somebody for a day or 2 days. And that person that comes in for that 1 day or 2 days for that one particular piece, that is a potential where you may have that leak or that introduction of that binary into the environment. And so we need to have a culture of understanding to say, these are the things, this is the rules of behavior that we have for our playground in which we work on these particular events. To me, those are the threats that really concern me the most because they're the easiest to come in. It's not so much the guys knocking on the door as it is, you know, somebody else may already be compromised and I don't know that and I'm letting you come into my environment to work on a project.
Jason? Yeah, and to add on to that, almost every content protection or digital, you know, content leak investigation that I've worked on, probably worked on 50 to 75 of them over the last few years, they've all come back to not some, well, with the exception of a few, they've all come back to some type of, not malicious, but some inadvertent leakage that occurred because there was an insecurity or a vulnerability on that third party or freelancer system. I just did I just experienced this with another company, a big insurance company, and they got a regulatory inquiry by FINRA, and they're just a big regulatory body that oversees that industry. And they said to the insurance company, you know, you have 858 registered representatives out there, and they're collecting data. And these are small mom-and-pop shops, very reminiscent of a lot of your freelancers, a lot of your color correction, a lot of your third-party vendors who are working on these films. And what the regulatory body said is, you, because they're collecting your data and because they're touching your information, you're responsible for that, even though you're two separate companies and you have no, you know, they're also selling insurance for a whole bunch of other different companies as well. So, you know, we can leave all of that other context aside, but the point is that this major insurance company decided, okay, how are we going to deal with this? And to Dan's point, they came up, we helped them come up with a framework for how, what are going to be the minimum standards that they're going to have, right? And I know all of you are sending out questionnaires and you're doing interviews and you're looking at your third-party vendors, and that's all great. But they took it one step further, and I wanted to share it with you. And they decided to have all, anyone who's going to touch their information put on this tool. And full disclosure, I have nothing to do with this company. I just think it's a fairly decent tool. It's called OpsWatt, okay? It's called MetaDefender from OpsWatt. And what this tool does is before they're allowed to connect to any insurance network, that tool will look and see, you know, in a very light touch, if they have minimum security standards. Are they running something, an operating system greater than XP, right? Newer than XP. Do they have an antivirus? Do they have a password, right? All of just sort of the basic kind of things that we want within our own companies and we're expecting from our own companies and vendors. But this is a way to actually verify it on top of it and give you a little bit more assurance, because I know that when you send out security questionnaires to your third-party vendors, they come back. And some of them come back looking really, really good, and you have a brief conversation with them. Everybody feels
Jason,
comfortable.
But I'm gonna cut you short there, yeah, just because I want to get onto one last question that I promise we would bring up, and that's incident response programs. Given what we've discussed so far today, with, you know, gaps, threats, and vulnerabilities in the past year, how's that informed or helped you evolve your incident response program? And Dan, I'd like you to start with it. Maybe talk about the information sharing component as well.
Oh my gosh, because, you know, that's a full hour right there. Hey? All right, so incident response, you know, it's one of those things you always have to practice, right? But there's a really good book out there. Gosh, I'll have to give you his name. But anyway, it's an incident response handbook. It's based off of the Army's manual that they have out there. It's very small, so don't worry. It's not like one of those massive books. But the thing is, though, is your breach is my breach, and my breach is your breach, especially when we look at how, if I'm a cloud-based company or if I'm working on a project with other different studios and other different talent, we have to work together. And so that's one of the main things that we've worked on, is building that incident response program that's not just an IT piece, it's the full company, and it has the different call sheets that say, here's all the communications plans to the public, to the talent, to the partners. You know, it goes step by step, and it says, you know, low breach to high breach, and it has a lot of details in there. But the thing is, though, is you have to not just have a solid plan, you have to exercise that plan on a regular basis, but more importantly, if I'm working on a project with Tom, I've got to have him at the table that we do a quick walkthrough to say, okay, if we're going to do this project, here's the escalation points, here's the communication tap points that we want to make sure that we have. And so if I see something, I say something. If you see something, you tell me, and we work together. Because at the end of the day, we're trying to reach the same goal. We're not going to point fingers. We have to be able to contain or remediate and take action as quickly as we can, because we know it's going to happen, but we need to be able to observe that something did occur. And that's one of the things that I challenge you today, that when you go back, take a look at who some of your top vendors are that you work with that have your data, whether it's our file and sharing service that's online or, you know, another major logo. Call them up and say, hey, if I had a breach today and somebody did this, what logs can you give me that you're not giving me now? What are the bits of information I need to have right now on hand, and what can you give me? And then keep a little short list there to say, you know what, we don't have this, 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 and this. I need to make sure I can get that, and this is how we're going to go ahead, and this is how we're going to put it into our plan.
Tom?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, I'm going to repeat myself, but it's a small company where we're, you know, focusing a lot of, obviously, content protection. Incident response is, obviously, we got a lot of work still to do there. But I do feel that incident response should be, and I think we little talked about it earlier, but getting the other industry in the, and the other companies in the industry aware of these kind of incidents when they do happen, and have kind of an open discussions about them, because we're here really to learn from each other. I mean, that's the biggest thing. So for us, when we do this kind of incident response, it's very important to share information and be shared with, right? So if there is anything happening, we'd love to know more about it, definitely.
Yeah, real briefly, the measure of a good information security program these days is not how many tools and how many people you have. It's how quickly can you detect when something happens, and how rapidly can you respond? It's all about incident response. And because, you know, these days, incidents will happen, and it's really not about the old perimeter style or defense in depth. It's really about how quickly can you identify an issue and react to that issue to stem the problem.
Great. And just to finish up, how many of you have regular incident response exercises? Just real briefly, show of hands. People in the audience? It's going to be just like BCP fun, right? Yearly. Great. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, John. Thank you for that great session.